Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Any particular topic you would like me to speak on today? Okay, we'll see. Om Jnanati Miram Dasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpataru Yascha Kripasindhu Yadevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna
Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much for coming this morning for this satsang. This is actually the purpose of human life. To come to the association of devotees and to hear and chant about Krishna. There is no higher goal, no higher purpose, no higher activity. There is nothing more important in our life than coming together in the association of devotees and hearing and chanting about Krishna. And this is not an exaggeration. In today's day and age, people have so many ideas about what is important. And the idea that we should come to the association of devotees and hear, in the general world outside, is not considered so important. And because we all have come from the outside world, so that thought process continues. And therefore, even after we become devotees, sometimes we may not give it so much importance. We may think, okay, I attend so many lectures, so it's okay if I am a little casual about this one or that one. I can come and be casual about it, but no. This is really the most important activity. And this process of bhakti is so wonderful and so simple that simply by hearing and chanting we can go home back to Godhead. Just by this process. No need to perform so many austerities. No need to go to the Himalayas. No need to take sannyas. No need to become a Sanskrit pandit. No need to stand on your head and do different types of asanas. No need for different types of difficulties. So simple and yet so difficult. Right? Coming to the association of devotees and sitting quietly and peacefully, without distraction, without sleeping, hearing attentively and chanting attentively. If we can do this much, then it is fine. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas and he travelled to various places of pilgrimage, he went to South India also, mostly to South India. And there on the banks of the Godavari River, he met a great devotee of Lord Krishna, who later then became a great follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. and his name was Ramananda Rai. And because he was a great devotee, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to glorify Ramananda Rai, because this is the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. The devotees are constantly engaged in glorifying the Lord, and the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna likes to glorify his devotees. This is the process of bhakti. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to show the world the glories of devotees like Ramananda Rai. In the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna declares to Arjuna that the enemies of the Pandavas have already been destroyed. And this Krishna stated even before the battle had begun. In other words, even before the battle had started, Krishna, who is the supreme controller of everything, knew and had also ensured that all the enemies of the Pandavas would be destroyed. But then why have the battle then? If Krishna has already destroyed, then why have the battle? Krishna is actually speaking in the form of time. Kalosmi lokakshayakrit pravrittaha. In the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, time I am, destroyer of all the worlds. So as a time factor, as a dispenser of justice and karma, Lord Krishna in any case accomplishes all that he has to do. Vinashaya cha dushkritam, paritranaya cha sadhunam, destroying the miscreants, protecting the devotees, that in any case Krishna does. But most importantly, Krishna wanted to give his dear devotee and friend Arjuna the credit. Arjuna worked hard for Lord Krishna's pleasure. He followed Lord Krishna's instruction and fought to his best ability. And that ability and power had also been given to him by Krishna. But because he surrendered to Lord Krishna, he could fight very vigorously and emerge victorious. So the victory actually was caused by Lord Krishna, but the credit went to Arjuna and the other Pandavas. So this is the nature of the Lord. He always likes to give credit to his devotees. Similarly, the devotees will always give credit to the Lord and to the other devotees. If a devotee does something wonderful, he or she will never say, see, I did something so well. Just see, I distributed so many books. Just see how wonderful a devotee I am. Or I have cooked such wonderful prasadam. See what a wonderful cook I am. Or I did kirtan so nicely. What a wonderful singer I am. A devotee doesn't think like this. A devotee always gives credit to Krishna and to devotees. So this is the wonderful nature, the reciprocal nature of bhakti, where the Lord and the devotee relate to each other. So in the course of the conversation, Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai, please tell me, what is the goal of life and how one should attain it? It is a long narration. I will not go to the whole narration. But some of you should read, at least those of you who are interested, and I hope everybody is interested. You can try to read about this conversation. It is one of the most important and foundational conversations that we have in our books. Because many of the essential conclusions of all our devotional service practices are mentioned over there. I will just summarize it to say that Ramananda Rai started off by giving so many answers. He started by saying, well, we should follow the duties of the Varnashrama Dharma. Whatever is our situation in life as householders and so on and so forth, as Brahmanas or Kshatriyas, we should do these activities nicely, then we can attain perfection of life. So Mahaprabhu said, okay, but you go further. And in this way, he started talking of various options, like giving up the activities of Varnashrama and surrendering to Krishna. But even that can be external if one is simply thinking of renunciation. And he went on and on and on. And finally, he came to one point where he quoted one verse spoken by Brahma. Brahmaji is a creator. And he spoke to Lord Krishna and offered his prayers. Wherein he said, Jnane prayasava tapasya namantya eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam sthane sthita shutikatam tanuvan manohir ye prayaso jita jito pyasita istri lokyam. It's a very important prayer for us, in which he said, my dear Lord Krishna, you are Ajit. One name of Krishna is Ajit, which means that he is unconquerable, undefeatable. But still, even though you are Ajita, you can be defeated. You can be conquered. But how and by whom? You cannot be defeated by non-devotees. You can only be conquered by those who are your unalloyed, pure devotees. And how will they conquer you? What will they do in order to conquer you? They should do three things. Number one, they should give up all this speculative idea of spiritual life. According to me, the truth is this. According to me, the truth is that. Give up all these independent ideas. Give up this path of speculation and trying to speculate an idea and by our own intelligence try to understand what the truth of life is. No. We should surrender to Lord Krishna and His pure devotees and learn from the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the proper parampara. Second, he said, Jivanti sanmukharitam bhavatiya vartam. He said, one should come to the association of devotees. Sat. Sat means truth. And sometimes Sat also refers to the devotees. Satam, of the devotees. When he says Sat Sangha, the Sangha of those who are on the Sat Marga, who are the path of truth. And devotion to Lord Krishna is the highest truth. So, sanmukharitam, from the mouths of those who are devotees of the Lord, who are situated on the path of truth, one should spend one's life hearing about your glories, O Lord Krishna. So, the second thing he says is that one should spend one's time and energy coming to the association of devotees and hearing about the Lord and chanting about the Lord. And the third thing he says, sthane sthita shrutigatam tanuvan manobhir. One should be in one situation, whatever one is, no need to change. If one is a householder, one can remain a householder and continue on with one's life and do devotional service, do bhakti. One doesn't need to take sannyas to do bhakti. If one is a householder, no problem. Carry on with your family duties, but serve Krishna. Of course, it doesn't mean that if one is studying in school, one should forever be in the school and not pass out of the school. We don't mean it in that way. But we mean that whatever be the external situation, one may grow up and move along in life, but not necessary to do drastic things or big renunciation and so on. In one situation, one should serve the Lord. Tanu, van, manobhir. Tanu means the body. Van means vak, with our words. And manaha means our mind. With our body, mind and action and our words, we should serve Krishna, being in our position, wherever we are. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, and this is the way that Krishna can be conquered, and he said, yes, now you have come to the correct answer. This is the goal of life. At this point, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was satisfied. Earlier, with whatever answers that had been given, Mahaprabhu had not been satisfied. But now, when Ramananda Rai quoted this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which explained that coming to the association of devotees and hearing and chanting about Krishna and serving Krishna with one's mind, one's body and one's words is the perfection of life, then Mahaprabhu became very happy. So just see, the goal of life is so simple. Just do what you are doing now. Rest of your life. It's not that later on in life there will be some new thing to do, some new thing has been discovered, some new path of spiritual realization. No. The same thing has to be continued. The disease of the material mind is that it is always looking for something new all the time. When Prabhupada used to speak about the body and the soul, sometimes devotees approached him and said, Prabhupada, we have been hearing that I am not the body, I am the soul. Every lecture we are hearing this. For years together we are hearing this. So we want to hear something new. So the answer is that there is nothing new. You are still the soul. You are not the body. That doesn't change. And even though we may know it intellectually, but we may not have realized it, by repeatedly hearing, we will try to realize it. Simply book knowledge is not sufficient, although it is necessary. In the language of mathematics, there is something called necessary, but not sufficient. Something is necessary, you have to do more also. So this is the process, very, very simple. And since we are talking of mathematics, it reminds me of a little story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would tell to illustrate a point. Small little story. One time there was one boy, school boy, and his mother arranged for a mathematics tutor for him because the child was weak in mathematics. So she arranged for a teacher to come and teach mathematics at home, some special tuition classes to the boy. Now the boy was already in the sixth standard. Now he started teaching one day geometry. So when he was teaching geometry, then he said, he was telling the boy, let ABC be a triangle. Yes? You have all studied mathematics in school, no? So you know that when you do geometry, you say, let ABC be a triangle. So the mother didn't know much of geometry or mathematics or anything. So she just heard that his teacher is saying ABC. So she thought, what kind of teacher is this? My child is in the sixth standard and he is teaching my child ABC. So she scolded the teacher and she sacked him, fired him. The teacher, poor fellow, tried to explain, look, I am not teaching ABC, I am teaching geometry. I am just saying, let ABC be a triangle. She is BSc Mathematics Honours, no? So you teach like that, isn't it? Let ABC be a triangle. So then the teacher had to be, he was fired and he left. So the student could not get his proper tuition. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a purport to the story by saying that this process of Bhakti Yoga is actually very high, very advanced, very exalted, very sublime, very effective. But because it appears to be so simple, People think it must be only for neophytes. It must be only for those who are not intelligent, who can't do anything else. Then for them, Bhakti Yoga. In India, I met one gentleman who told me, actually, see, for Bhakti Yoga, it is for sentimental people. Because Bhakti means devotion. Devotion means sentimental. So Bhakti Yoga is for sentimental people. Karma Yoga is for very active people. And Jnana Yoga is for intelligent people. So this is the kind of misconceptions that people have. They have no idea what is Karma Yoga, what is Bhakti Yoga, what is Jnana Yoga. They don't know what the word yoga implies. So they think like this, speculatively, try to concoct their own ideas. But actually, yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj. Yuj means to link with Krishna, to link in love with Krishna. Krishna swarupa hoye jeev. Jivere swarupa hoye Krishna nityadas. I was just waiting for you to correct me. Many would rather have it the other way around. Krishna swarupa hoye jivere nityadas. That it is the business of Krishna to fulfill all my desires. Otherwise, what is the meaning of being God if you don't fulfill my desires? So Prabhupada would not like this mentality. He would say, don't make God your order supplier. Or in modern day language, we will say that don't make God your supermarket, where you will go with a long shopping list and say, God, I want this, I want that. That is not what God is meant for. Even though God will do it if you go forward to, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but anyway, He will do it. But that is not what God is meant for. God is meant for us to love Him and serve Him without any motivation. So yoga means to reconnect with the Supreme Lord, who is our origin. And that connection, that relationship is one of love naturally, constitutionally. So the love and the relationship between the Jiva and Krishna being a natural constitutional one, one doesn't need to artificially do something about it. It just has to be awakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sathya Kabunoy Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Karare Udaye. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that this Krishna Prema, this love for the Supreme Lord, is already dormant in the heart of all living beings. And just by the process of hearing and chanting, it is revived, it comes up again, it rises in the heart. Shravan Adi, Shuddha Chitte Kare Udaye. Shravan Adi means by hearing, etc. Shuddha Chitte, with a pure consciousness or heart, Kare Udaye, so it rises, it awakens in the heart of the living entity. Prabhupada gave a very fundamental lecture in the beginning of these con years in the mid-1960s in America. It is a very famous lecture that is there in all the tapes where he chants in the Kirtan also. Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. Rather, it is the original energy of the living entity. How many of you have heard this lecture of Prabhupada before? How many of you hear Prabhupada's lectures regularly? That means others are not hearing. So everybody, please hear Srila Prabhupada's lectures regularly. And also please read Srila Prabhupada's books regularly. It is very important that you should hear from Srila Prabhupada and understand these things very carefully. So what Prabhupada is saying is, that this is the fundamental energy, the constitutional nature of the living entity. It is not that when we do Bhakti Yoga, we are imposing something artificial on somebody. You see, true love cannot be imposed on anyone. Can you hold a gun to somebody's head and say, love me? Can you do that? Then that love will not happen. So what are we doing when we do bhakti yoga? We are doing what is called sadhana bhakti. There are two words which are very important for us to understand. One is called sadhana and the other is called sadhya. Sadhya is the goal and sadhana is the means to attain that goal. The means and the end. Sadhana and sadhya. So what are we doing now? Sadhana bhakti. We are doing practice in devotional service so that we will eventually attain the goal, the sadhya, which is pure bhakti. Right now our devotion is mixed. We have so many other desires in our heart other than the desire to only serve and please Krishna. But nevertheless, by following the sadhana bhakti process, which basically involves hearing and chanting and doing many other things also, as described by the acharyas, we revive that dormant loving propensity within us for Krishna. It is already there. It is covered over. Sadhana bhakti is a stage of practice. When we keep on practicing, then automatically we reach the stage of perfection. Can you attain perfection in anything without practice? When you want to be a good cricketer, you have to practice so much. When you want to be a good painter, you also have to practice. To do mathematics, you have to practice sums, no problems. You have to go on practicing. When you're learning to play a musical instrument, you must practice so much. When you learn typing, initially you will type with one finger and then you will learn to type with other fingers. And eventually by many, many weeks and weeks of practice, then your fingers will start flying across the keyboard. And then you will come to a point where you don't even have to look at the keyboard. Without looking, you will type correctly and very fast. So you reach a stage of almost perfection. But how did you reach that stage? By practice. By regular, steady practice. So there is a saying in English, practice makes perfect. So similarly for bhakti. The stage of sadhya bhakti or perfection is when we naturally, spontaneously, automatically love Krishna. Like the residents of Vrindavan did. But since we are not in that position now, we have to practice to reach that stage of perfection. Now let me give you some simple examples. I was discussing this at one university program the other day. Suppose there is a child and he has not yet learned to walk because he is very, very small. What is the process by which the child learns to walk? Practice, the child rises, tries to walk, falls down with a thud, again rises, again walks, holds something, somebody else holds him, he leaves him, again he falls. But he tries and practices, then he starts walking a little unsteadily, walks few feet and falls down. And by practicing like this, gradually he is able to walk steadily. And then as he grows up, then his walking becomes very confident. So by practice, he learns how to walk nicely. But if the tendency or if the basic ability to walk was not within him, would he have been able to learn to walk by practice?
No.
No. Just like a baby bird can learn to fly by practice. Just by flapping the wings, it learns how to fly. Initially it will fall down, but then it will fly. Because that basic ability to fly is there in the body of the bird. So by little bit of practice, the bird learns to fly. But we, as human beings, do not have the ability to fly. This human body doesn't have it. So no matter how much you wave your hands, all your life from childhood till old age, you keep on flapping the hand, hoping you will one day start flying, it will never happen. Isn't it? Why? Because the basic ability to fly is not there in this human body. So no amount of practice will give you perfection in flying. You will not be able to fly. So therefore, practice is necessary to bring the one to the point of perfection, but the basic ability has to be there, otherwise no amount of practice will help. You can go only up to a point. Like I may want to bat like Sachin Tendulkar and I may practice till the end of my life, but because the basic ability is not there to be that good, I will not be able to bat like him. So, the fact that by practice, by sadhana bhakti, one can reach the platform of pure bhakti, pure love for Krishna, it means that this love is already there. That ability, that true love is already there within, and that is why by practice we are able to reveal that, to manifest that. That simply gets uncovered. This is what the Krishna consciousness process is all about, and this is what hearing and chanting is all about. Just by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, so powerful are the vibrations that automatically we become very blissful and very happy. In the beginning, there will be some difficulty. We may find it boring, we may feel sleepy. But actually you will see the power of the spiritual vibration is that even when devotees come to a lecture of Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam and they fall asleep, even then they look so happy. Yes? Have you seen when you travel by public transport, people are sleeping in the trains or the buses and they look so grumpy and grouchy. But when devotees fall asleep in the class, just look at their face. How much they are happy, they are smiling away nicely and they are sleeping. It goes to show that the process is very blissful. And even though one may sleep in the class, the soul is hearing. Even though the material mind is not hearing it, but the soul is hearing that there is spiritual benefit. That doesn't mean that one should then sleep. But the point is that even if one sleeps, there is still benefit. This is the nature of Krishna consciousness, of hearing and chanting. Simply come to the association of devotees and sit. That is a perfection. So Kapila Dev and Devahuti, his mother, they also have a wonderful conversation. And Kapila Dev, who is an incarnation of Lord Krishna, he tells his mother, Satam prasandan mama vi samvido bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha tad joshanad ashva bhavarga vartmani shraddha rati bhakti anukramishyati. He says, my dear mother, he becomes a guru of his own mother because he is the Lord. He says, my dear mother, you are inquiring about the perfection of life and devotional service. So let me tell you that the perfection of life is to come to the association of devotees. Satam prasangam. Satam means of the devotees. Satam. Prasangam. Sangha and prasanga. Sangha means the association. Prakrishta rupena sangha. So that sangha in which one does so with great devotion and attention, that is called prasanga. Like shanta and prashanta. Shanta means one who is peaceful. Prashanta means one who is really peaceful. Very peaceful. Of course, in this day and age, someone may have a name Prashant and not be Prashant. Someone may have the name Amar and not be Amar. Amar means to be eternal. The body is not eternal. Someone may have the name Vivek and not be very Viveki. So like this, we may have names in this world, that's okay. But the real meaning is like this. So therefore, he says, prasangan, satam prasangan. One should come to the association of devotees. But it doesn't mean, as I was mentioning yesterday, that one comes to the association of devotees and goes to the cinema. I was with the satam prasangan. I went with the devotees to see the football match, to see the cinema, to the hotel. No. The devotion, the association of devotees is characterized by the next part of what Kapila Dev says. Mama virya samvido. That when one comes to the association of devotees, one must hear and chant about Krishna. Because he himself is an incarnation. He says, mama, mine. And when one does that, bhavanti, something begins to happen. What begins to happen? No, you don't regret it. Rit karna, to the heart and to the ears, rasayana katha. One starts beginning to like it. Even though initially one may start getting bored. So you see, in the beginning what happens is, when one speaks to newcomers, one has to crack a lot of jokes. One has to tell stories. So many things, so that they will feel enlivened and they will not run away. They will come back again next time and hear some philosophy. But gradually, as the time goes on, and the devotees get a little taste and a little understanding, now they want the real thing. Yes, few jokes here and there are nice, but now they want the real thing. Now they want to understand really the philosophy. They want to understand Krishna consciousness more deeply. Now they have become serious practitioners of Krishna consciousness. Serious practitioners doesn't mean you're always grim and you never smile. Not like that. It means that you're taking the process very seriously, and when you take the process seriously, you'll be always smiling. And that is what it happens. And the proof is, just look at your neighbor. Look left and look right. And see the big smile on their face. And you will see how Krishna consciousness brings so much happiness. So Kapila Dev says, bhavanti hrit karna rasayana katha. These kathas, they then become very tasty, very delicious, very relishable. Taj joshanad ashu. And then very quickly one progresses. Progresses on which path? Apavarga vartmani. On the path of apavarga, on the path of liberation. Yesterday evening at the Bhakti Viksha program, I was explaining this word pavarga and apavarga. I think some of you were present last time. So you know that the word pavarga indicates the material world, and apavarga indicates the path of liberation from this material world. So apavarga vartmani means the path of liberation. And as we progress speedily on this path in the association of devotees, then what happens? Shraddha, rati, bhakti, anukramishyati. Step by step, one gets faith, one gets strong attraction or attachment to Krishna, and eventually one develops unalloyed pure love for Lord Krishna, which is the perfection of our life. So this is the process, and this is the power of association of devotees. One time the great saint Narad Muni went to the Lord in Vaikuntha and said, my dear Lord, I want to know, what is the power of the association of devotees? So the Lord said, all right, Narad Muni, you do one thing. You go to such and such place. It is in such and such corner of Melbourne. You go there. And there is a small worm who lives there in one of the fields. So you go and see him, and this is his address. And then you will know what is the power of association of devotees. So he went. He was wondering in his mind, how can I go to a worm and find out the importance or the benefit of association of devotees? Sounds a little strange. But since the Lord Himself is saying it, it is obviously true. It will be for my benefit. So he came all the way from Vaikuntha to Melbourne. And then he came to that worm. And he saw the worm. The worm also saw Narad Muni. As soon as the worm saw Narad Muni, he died. So Narad Muni was disappointed. He said, "Oh, I came all the way from Vaikuntha to Melbourne just to ask this question. You know, because the Lord said, go and ask this question to that worm. And before I could ask him, now he has died." So very disappointed, Narad Muni went back to the Lord in Vaikuntha. "Oh Lord, this worm died. I didn't get the answer to my question." So the Lord said, "Okay, don't worry. In another part of Melbourne, somewhere there is one farmer and there is a calf who has just been born to a cow. You go to that calf and you will get your answer." So he said, "Alright, now what to do? The Lord is saying I will do it." So he went, came back to Melbourne and went to that farm and he met that calf. He saw the calf and he was about to eagerly ask the question, "Please tell me the importance of association of devotees." As soon as the calf saw him, the calf died. Now Narad Muni started really getting worried, what is happening? So he went back to Vaikuntha and said, "Lord, every time you tell me to go and I go and meet that person, whenever that person sees me, he dies. Doesn't matter. Now I'll give you another idea. Now there is a prince. You see, he was in such and such place. You go and ask him this question. He has just been born recently, young boy. So you go there and ask him, what is the importance of the association of devotees?" So Narad Muni said, "But my dear Lord, what if he dies now? Only the worm and the calf have died, now this prince also may die. Don't worry, you go to him." So then Narad Muni went to this prince. The prince was a small, newly born babe practically. But because now the Lord had desired something, so that little boy started to speak when Narad Muni approached him. He said, "Oh Prince, I am Narada. I have been sent to you by the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha, Lord Narayan, Lord Krishna. So he has sent me to you to get the answer to this very important question. And the question is, what is the importance and the power of the association of devotees?" And Narad Muni may have been a little nervous. "I hope nothing goes wrong here." And then that prince sat up and spoke. He said, "My dear great sage, let me tell you that it is I who was that worm. Just by seeing you, such a great devotee, just one glance of you, and I got immediately promoted to the body of a cow. A superior species than a worm, just by one glance of you. And then when you came again, I was that calf. Just by looking at you, I got the body of a human being. And now I got the body of a prince, not just an ordinary human being. And now that I have seen you and got your association, I feel my dormant love for Krishna awakening. And now, by your mercy, I have become a devotee of the Lord. Even you, without you even speaking one word." So this is the power of association of devotees, O Narad Muni. This is what the Lord sent you to me to find out. So Narad Muni himself is such a great devotee. So he understood the glories of the association of devotees. And Narad Muni himself also narrated the story to his disciple Vyasadeva to illustrate how powerful is the company of devotees. Vyasadeva one time asked his guru, Narad Muni, "Please tell me, how did you become a devotee of the Lord?" It's a very important, nice question that people regularly ask each other. In the old days, in the back to Godhead, perhaps even now, There always used to be a popular column that was called How I Came to Krishna Consciousness, where different devotees narrate their experiences of how they became devotees. Very interesting to hear some of these experiences. So in any case, so that is also coming in parampara from Narad Muni. So Narad Muni explained that one of my previous lives, my previous life, I was a son of a maidservant. And this maidservant was alone. And she was looking after me very nicely. I was only a small boy. She was a pious, devoted lady, but she was very poor. And she had nobody in her life except me, and I had nobody in my life except her. Because she was a pious lady, the Lord sent her the opportunity to associate with many sadhus one time in the Chaturmasya period. As you know, the Chaturmasya period is the 4 months of the rainy season when traditionally sadhus do not travel. Generally, sadhus are supposed to travel everywhere, be on the move. A rolling stone gathers no moss. So renunciate monks are supposed to travel widely. So they don't become attached to any one place. They go on moving and give knowledge of Krishna everywhere. So these sages, they settle down here in the 4 months of the rainy season, the Chaturmasya. And they would do kirtan, they would chant the holy names of the Lord. They would have discussions based on the shastras amongst each other. And one time only, Narad Muni says, as a boy in my previous life, with their permission, I took the remnants of their prasadam. And then my consciousness changed. Of course, the benefit of that prasadam or that mahaprasadam was definitely there. But we must also remember that Narad Muni was serving these devotees even as he was a small child. He was serving the small sadhus. He must have been doing some menial service for them. He was sitting quietly in their midst when they were talking and doing kirtan. He was not a frivolous, mischievous child like normally children are. He was very sober, and quietly he would sit down and just hear what was going on in the midst of the sadhus. So because of that, in just a short span of time, he developed a very strong attraction to the path of devotion to Lord Krishna. And then after the Chaturmasya period was over, these sages left. And one day, Narad Muni explained, when my mother went down to milk a cow after dusk, it was a little dark. She was bitten by a snake and she died. And I was all alone in this world. I was only 5 years old. I had no friends, no relatives, and no other person to support me. But actually, I became very enlivened, thinking that now I can take full shelter of Lord Krishna. Now there will be no other attachment in my life. So I left home and I wandered in the forests and the pasturing grounds, the villages, the towns. Everywhere I wandered, and I settled down eventually in one place, meditated upon the Lord constantly, and eventually the Lord appeared before me. But actually then he said, he disappeared. That vision of the Lord was so blissful for me that I cannot explain the ecstasy that I felt. And then all of a sudden the Lord disappeared. And then again I tried to sit in the same posture that I was sitting earlier, hoping that the Lord would again come into my vision. But he did not. Try as hard as I might, the Lord did not appear before me again. And then finally I heard this message, this Akashvani, this voice from the sky that came and said, my dear child, do not be anxious. In this life, I will not appear before you again as I did. I appeared before you one time only to give you a taste of what my darshan and my service is like. I have done this only to increase your hankering for me. Continue to serve me like this all your life. Continue to hanker for me, and whatever minute traces of contamination are there in your heart will get erased, and eventually you will become my pure unalloyed devotee and come to me. And in the next life, then Narad Muni explained, I got this spiritual body. I appeared as a son of Brahma. So then he has become Narad Muni. Narada is one who gives the gift of devotion to the humanity at large. That is why he is called Narad Muni. And this position he attained because he obtained the association of devotees of the Lord. Therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tulyama lavenapi naspargam napunarbhavan bhagavat sangi sangasya martyanam kimutashishaha. The meaning of this verse is that even a moment's or less than a moment's association, lavena api, a lava is 1/11th of a second, even a fraction of a moment's association with Bhagavat Sanghi Sangha, Sangasya. Bhagavat Sanghi refers to the devotees who are the associates of the Lord. So having the Sangha of those who have the Sangha of the Lord, in other words, the devotees' association, even a fraction of moment of that is more priceless than the attainment of Swarga. Swarga as well as Apavarga, even liberation. What to speak of the ordinary benefits or the gains of this ordinary earthly planet, like money and a few pleasures of this world? What to speak of that? So valuable is the association of devotees. So we have got the most priceless gift, the gift of devotees of Krishna. Prabhupada said that I have formed ISKCON for only one reason. What is that reason? Yes, to give to the world the association of devotees. Otherwise, what do we have to do with institutions and organizations and these things? The purpose is simply that via this organization, via the institution, we are able to organize things in such a way that the maximum number of people can get the association of devotees. So this is the most priceless gift that Srila Prabhupada and Krishna have given to us. Just see, it seems like 99% of you are from India. And probably most of you would not have imagined that you would come to Melbourne and get Sadhu Sangha. And come in the association of devotees and become devotees. Probably amongst you, most of you have become devotees after coming here. Maybe if you were in India, you weren't devotees, and maybe you would not have become devotees also. Because familiarity breeds contempt. In India, we see it so common. So in places like India, people, because of familiarity, they develop contempt towards the ordinary devotees. They are very attracted to the razzle-dazzle of the West. Prabhupada used to say that people in India are so close to Krishna, very close, but they're moving like this in the opposite direction. People in the West are far from Krishna, but they're moving towards Krishna. So in India, we're all trying to imitate the ways of the West, all trying to go after. We have got that days of that mode of passion, because we are seeing all the nice facilities in the Western countries and we want to have all those things. So people in India are mad after these things. It is the goal of life of people in India, somehow they will go abroad and settle down, you know. Not Goloka Vrindavan. Somehow America must go and settle down. I remember one sannyasi was saying that he went to a certain temple and the priest of that temple was saying, "Swamiji, I have one request. I have two sons and my younger son is very intelligent. So I am sending him abroad to study. But the older one is not intelligent, so I am making him a priest. The younger one, you please help him to go abroad and get some nice job." So in India, what is happening? Familiarity breeds contempt. So in India, mostly if people go, you go to people, "Yes, I know Bhagavad Gita, I know Krishna." Especially when ISKCON was just formed and Prabhupada's devotees first came into India, Western devotees, and they started speaking about Krishna and Bhagavad Gita to the Indians, there was some degree of fascination. The dancing white elephants, Prabhupada called them. But at the same time, they were thinking, "What would these people teach us about Krishna? We are born in India, we know Krishna, we know Ram." So therefore, the ordinary response is, "I know Krishna." But Brahmaji, the creator of the universe, the Adi Guru of all of us, the Acharya of our Sampradaya, the great devotee of Krishna, even he prays to Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam and says, there are many people who say, "I know Krishna, but I am not amongst them, my dear Lord." Even though Brahma knows Krishna, who can know Krishna better than Brahma, such a great devotee? But he understands that knowing Krishna is not a cheap thing, not a small thing. It is such an exalted position. Jananta eva janantu kim bahukya name prabho. Manasa vapusho vacho vaibhavam tava gochara. There are many people who think that they know Krishna and they say, "I know Krishna, but I am not one amongst them, O Lord. As far as I am concerned, I understand that with my mind, with my body and with my words, I can never approach the limits of your glories. You are so great that it is impossible for me to understand you completely, although I am trying with my very small intelligence." And Brahma's intelligence is not small. Brahma is the most intelligent and powerful being in the universe, next to God Himself. And still, he thinks himself incapable of understanding Krishna completely. Which is a fact, because Krishna is like the sun, and in front of the sun, even Brahmaji is like a firefly. You know what is a firefly? A firefly seems very attractive in the night time when it is dark. But when the sun rises and there is a shining sun, then no one looks at the firefly. No one notices the light of the firefly. Similarly, so long as we don't know about the glories of Krishna, we may be very attracted to the wealthy people, beautiful people, intelligent people, powerful people of this world. We don't even know about the demigods, what to speak of Brahma. And what to speak of Brahma, we don't know about Krishna. So Brahma is making such a statement that even I cannot imagine reaching the limits of the glories of Krishna. So this is how glorious Lord Krishna is. And still people in India will casually say, "I know Krishna." That means they don't know what they are talking about. They just have some vague idea. One time an Indian gentleman came to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was speaking about Bhagavad Gita. And this gentleman came to Prabhupada and said, "Swamiji, I read Bhagavad Gita in 1 hour 48 minutes. I can finish. I read." So Prabhupada could sense that this person is a little proud. "And I can read Bhagavad Gita in 1 hour 48 minutes. So he said, "That is very nice that you can read Bhagavad Gita and you do in 1 hour 48 minutes. But can you live Bhagavad Gita for 1 hour 48 minutes?" Just reading Bhagavad Gita is one thing, but living according to the principles of Bhagavad Gita is another thing. So knowing Krishna means to live a Krishna conscious lifestyle. Just saying, I know Krishna, and then going and watching the cinema songs on the television, that is not knowing Krishna. So knowing Krishna means to do all that is necessary to love Krishna. And actually developing this attraction for Krishna and simultaneously developing a detachment from all that is not connected to Krishna. So this process of sadhana bhakti is also like the process of eating. Eating everybody knows, even if people don't know sadhana bhakti, they know the process of eating. So the acharyas have compared the process of Krishna consciousness to eating. Bhakti parishanu bhavo virakti anyatra chaishatraka eka kalaha prapadyamanasya yathashnatasyo tushti pushti kshudapayo nukhasam. The nine yogendras in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto describe, they compare the process of bhakti to eating. Just as when we are eating, with every morsel, anughasam, three things happen. Trika eka kalaha, at one time. What are those three things? Tushti. We become very satisfied. Oh, this gulab jamun is so nice. Pushti. We get nourishment. We get some strength. Kshut apayaha. Our hunger gets mitigated. And these things happen together. It's not that first I start feeling nice, then I start getting nourished, then the hunger starts getting mitigated. Not like that. It all happens at the same time. So similarly, prapadyamanasya, for one who has sheltered, who has taken complete shelter of Lord Krishna with his heart and soul, and for such a person, these three things happen together. Bhakti, which means attraction for Krishna, love for Krishna. Para isha anubhavaha, to experience Krishna in one's life, in one's day-to-day life. Virakti anyatra, to become detached from other things which are not connected to Krishna. These things happen simultaneously with this practice of bhakti, sadhana bhakti. So this is your thermometer. Check yourself for how much you are advancing in your Krishna consciousness. And as in, when you continue to practice these very simple principles of devotional service, your life will become sublime. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So I would like to thank all of you for your patient and kind attention for having come here and sat through this program. I would also like to give a special thanks to our hosts, Ajay and Nirata, for having hosted us today and made nice facilities, arranging a nice place to stay and prasadam and so on. We pray to Radha Vallabha that they may kindly bless them with pure devotional service. And also that they may be kind enough, the Lordships may be kind enough to bless all of us with nice progress in the path of pure devotional service. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I will be happy to try to answer them. Yes.
What is the importance of self-assessment in devotee's life?
What is the importance of self-assessment in a devotee's life? It is as important as self-assessment is in any other field of life. Correct? Should a student have some self-assessment? Should a sportsman have some self-assessment? In any sphere of life, there should be some self-assessment. We will call it introspection, to look within. There must be some honesty. With honesty, we must accept our weaknesses and we must try to rectify them according to the guidance of the scriptures and the acharyas and the devotees in general. And we must try to build up on our strong points. We must try to first of all at least recognize where we are going wrong, what are our weaknesses, what are the mistakes we have done, and we should be careful not to do them in the future. So yes, self-assessment is important for a devotee. Okay? Yes, some questions. Okay, very good question. What if your mother and father are not ready to join in Krishna consciousness, but we are interested, but someone is still preaching to them? Interesting.
He's asking this question.
He's asking the question.
He's not my son.
Okay. You are quick to clarify. Child is the father of man. There is a saying in English. I will tell you a story. There was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu whose name was Mukunda, and he was a doctor, a Vaidya. He had nice deities in his house and he would serve them. One day there was an emergency call. You know, doctors sometimes have to attend emergencies because some patient was sick. He had to rush. But at that moment, he was just about to offer bhoga to the Lord, just about to offer foodstuffs to the Lord. But he could not delay his visit to the patient. He had a small son who was maybe only 5 years old or something. His name was Raghunandan. So he called Raghunandan and said, "Look, here is a plate of bhoga, of food. Please make Krishna eat." He didn't use technical words like naivedya or bhoga or offering. He just said, "Make Krishna eat," because that is what his boy could understand. And Mukunda assumed that this boy would understand what it means to make Krishna eat. He has to put the plate in front of Krishna's deity. So Mukunda was thinking, "But father, I don't know how to make Krishna eat." "No, you just place and request him to eat, he will eat it because you are asking him." So Mukunda left in a hurry. And then Raghunandan took the plate, kept it in front of the deity of Krishna. He looked up at Krishna and said, "Krishna, eat." So the plate was still there. Because he was a small boy, he did not understand the ways in which the deity of Krishna eats. Krishna's deity does not eat like the way we do. We eat physically with our hands and our mouth and so on. But Krishna, being absolute, can eat even just by glancing with his eyes. Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pashyanti panti kalyanti chiram jaganti. So Krishna can perform the actions of any one sense organ with any of the other sense organs. So he can even eat with his eyes. So when we place food in front of Krishna, he glances at the food, and just by glancing, he accepts it. He actually eats it. But when we eat the food, it disappears. It goes into our stomach. And for Krishna, he eats it and still keeps it back in the plate, full as it was before, but with something very special added, that spiritual power of devotion. So then those who eat that prasadam, that food, become devoted to Krishna. It is called prasadam. Prasadam means mercy. So this little boy, Raghunandan, did not understand all this philosophy. So he thought that my father said, "May Krishna eat," that means Krishna has to eat like we eat. So he must actually put his hand forward, take the food, put it in his mouth, eat it. So he said, Krishna, eat, and he went out to play with his friends. He came back after 5 minutes, everything was still on the plate. He said, Krishna, eat. So again he went out to play, came back after 5 minutes, food was still there. He said, Krishna, I think you're not eating because I don't know all the mantras and all the other procedures. I'm a small boy. How do I know all these mantras? That my father knows, I don't know it. So please eat. Otherwise my father will be very angry with me when he comes back. So then he went out and he came back in 5 minutes and the plate was empty. Krishna had actually eaten. So now the boy was happy. Yes, Krishna has eaten. After a while, Mukunda came back, but now he was hungry. So he said, Raghunandan, give the prasadam, mahaprasadam of the Lord. The Lord ate it. Yes, very nice. You did a good job. Lord ate, but now give me the mahaprasadam. But no, no, the Lord ate everything. What do you mean he ate everything? Yes. He showed the plate. See, he ate everything. Now, if your child did that, you would have some questions in your mind, isn't it? You would think this child is just bluffing. Actually, he must have eaten everything. And he says, now Krishna has eaten it. So of course, he didn't believe him. But then he had a doubt. He said, who knows? The ways of Krishna and this boy, he might just be an exceptional devotee. Who knows? He says, okay, Raghunandan, you make Krishna eat this laddu. He gave him one laddu. He said, offer it. You make Krishna eat. And this time Raghunandan hid behind a curtain to see. So as usual, Raghunandan put the laddu on a plate, went in front of Krishna and said, Krishna, eat. So then Krishna, in the deity, leaned forward, took up the laddu, put it in his mouth, and took one bite, half of it. By the time he noticed, the deity noticed that Mukunda was watching from behind the curtain. Immediately he kept half the laddu back. And then he stood back like this, as he was in his original position. This time Mukunda understood. He saw half the laddu lying there on the plate. He embraced his son and said, now my life has become successful. Because my son has become a pure devotee of Krishna. When Mukunda went to Puri the next time, the next year, to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this story had already spread and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had also heard about it. So Mahaprabhu, after he discussed many things with Mukunda, he said, so Mukunda, is Mukunda the father and Raghunandan the son? Or is Mukunda the son and Raghunandan the father? So Mukunda replied, Raghunandan is the father and I am the son. Because he has taught me what is Krishna consciousness. Therefore he is my father and I am his son. Although biologically I am the father, but actually speaking he is the father. One time it so happened that I was in one temple and one couple came in with their son. And he approached me and started talking. And after chatting for a while, then they were about to leave and I asked him, so what is your name? He said, my name is Mukunda. I said, really? Just this morning I was telling the story of Mukunda, the great devotee called Mukunda and his son Raghunandan. He said, really? My son is also Raghunandan. So these little things happen sometimes. So anyway, so the point is, who is the father, who is the son? Sometimes a child can be like the guru for the elders. There are so many instances in our movement of how parents have come to Krishna consciousness because of their children. Sometimes the other way around also, of course. So yes, don't worry. Just keep doing your Krishna consciousness nicely and you pray to Krishna. Krishna, please make my parents nice devotees. Okay? Yes. Hare Krishna. Oh, so many questions. Please tell us about subtle body parts in relationship to the soul. Oh, such a complicated question. Subtle body parts? Not that there are parts, but we can say that the subtle body has the mind, the intelligence and the false ego. And the subtle body is a vehicle that transfers the soul from one body in the time of death to the next body. Suffice it to say for now, for more details, you please study Bhagavad Gita carefully, Prabhupada's books, and you will understand very nicely. Perhaps you should also join Bhakti Shastri and learn. It will be very, very nice. If bhakti is so simple like ABC example, why it appears to be so difficult? Because we are difficult. Bhakti is not difficult. We have made it difficult. Prabhupada used to say that bhakti is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. So if we make ourselves very simple, then bhakti will be very simple. After all, what is required, as I mentioned in the lecture, come to the association of devotees, hear and chant about Krishna, take some prasadam and go back to Godhead. Yes? As we are all children of Krishna, why did Krishna not keep us, our soul, with Him? Why did He allow us to take a body? Because we wanted to. We wanted to be separate from Him. Sometimes you want your child to be with you, but the child wants to play. So you let him go to play, no? Isn't it? Do 24 hours, chain him up and keep him with you? You give him some freedom because how else can he be happy? That is the meaning of love and that is the meaning of free will. And if when the child grows up, he wants to be away from you, what can be done? That is the free will. You may not be happy about it, but you give that free will to your child. That is your love for the child. So similarly, as spirit souls, we have free will. We have the free will to love Krishna, and we have the free will to not love Krishna. So when we don't want to love Krishna, then Krishna also has to facilitate that bad desire. He says, okay, you want to be away from me, you want to enjoy separately from me, so I will give you a place that is called the material world. Go and take a material body. And then when you are tired of that false enjoyment, then you come back to me. I am waiting for you. Okay. Could you please explain the significance of your Tridandi?
Is this?
Okay. You know in the West how I explain it? I carry this with me when I go for a talk because it helps me to deal with people who ask difficult questions. So it's a warning when you go out. You better hear me attentively, don't sleep in the lecture, pay attention. So this is the primary purpose. The secondary purpose is that it is a symbol of renunciation. A tridandi, three dandas, three sticks, representing the mind, body and words. All three are surrendered to Krishna. Actually, there is a fourth.
Yeah, there is a hook.
The fourth stick. That is representing the soul. But even the soul is surrendered to Krishna. So this stick represents the surrender of the body, mind, words and one's soul to Krishna. Right? That is the significance. How to develop a habit of not finding fault in others? Is it due to the contamination in our own heart? If so, how to overcome it? So how should one not find fault in others? By not finding fault in others. Very simple. Is it due to the contamination in our heart? Perhaps. You have heard the English proverb of the pot calling the kettle black. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say that there was once a sieve. You know what is a sieve? See, you have sieve in the house? Chani. Can you please give it here? And send one here. Anyone has a needle here? Sewing needle? Yes. Okay, so very nice. Here we have one needle. And here we have one sieve. What do you see here?
Holes.
How many holes? How many holes do you see? 5, 10, hundreds of holes. And needle, what do you see? Does it have a hole?
Yes.
How many holes?
One
hole. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur one time said, the sieve was one time criticizing the needle. Oh, just see, you have a hole. So what was funny about this? The sieve had hundreds of holes. And he is criticizing the needle because the needle has one hole. So it is like when we find fault with others, it is like the sieve finding fault with the needle. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when we see faults in others, first and foremost we should look within ourselves and see the fault in our own natures. Then we will stop finding fault with others. Practically, the way to do it also is to see the good qualities that they may have. One time two devotees, they had some strong difference of opinion and there was some strain in their relationship. So they came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And these two devotees were practically not talking to each other. Even both were nice devotees, but somehow they were not talking to each other. Katti. Said not to talk. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went and sit down. He said, okay, so what is the problem? So the first devotee said, oh, he did like this, he is like this. And he asked the second, so what happened? Oh, he is like this, he did like this. Okay, fine. So he asked the first devotee, you mentioned some faults in him. Yes, yes. Do you see any good qualities in him? So he was taken aback, started thinking. Yes, actually he sings kirtan very nicely. Okay. Second good quality, can you think? Yes. Actually, he speaks very nicely about Krishna. Okay. Third, and he went on and on and on, making him say the good qualities of this person. And then he made the other person say the good qualities about this person. By the time they finished, they had forgotten all the faults. And they became good friends again. So when you focus on the bad qualities, then the relationship gets spoiled. Your impressions about the other person get spoiled. When you focus on the good qualities, then everything becomes nice. So we should try to focus on the good qualities, realizing that we also have so many faults. Nobody is perfect in this world. It is natural that we will have some kind of mistakes or faults that we do. So we should not take the faults of others too seriously. Rather, if at all there is a serious fault, we should try to encourage that devotee to overcome it in a very friendly way. And then see the good qualities and help each other to grow in Krishna consciousness. You mentioned the power of association. Can you please clarify how to really take advantage, good advantage of association of the devotees? The answer is by doing exactly what I said in the lecture. That you come regularly, timely, consistently to the association of devotees, participate in the programs attentively with faith and devotion. Whether it is hearing a lecture, participating in a kirtan, doing some seva, having friendships with the devotees, being considering oneself as a humble servant of all the devotees. Next, how to make the gathering more devotional rather than social? By keeping the focus on Krishna. Of course, some degree of social interaction is necessary. It is also part of our human society. We can't avoid it. And that is also helpful to some degree. After all, we are not machines. So yes, some degree of social interaction. Which standard is your son in? What is he doing? How is your job going on? Okay, little things fine, but not that 90% of your talk is only on that and no Krishna, no space for Krishna. It should not become like that. The focus should be on Krishna and a little bit of socializing for our other needs, that is alright. Could you say something on devotee relationships, especially in terms of two aspects? Number one, gossiping and criticizing others. Oh. And second, the phenomenon of I felt bad because someone said or did something to me. The bura lag gaya issue. Yes. This human relationships is the number one problem in this world. Not terrorism, not unemployment, recession. Real problems are people can't get along with each other. Because in this age of Kali, people have no patience, no understanding, no tolerance, no spirit of sacrifice. Generally in this age, people are self-centered and selfish. They don't want to sacrifice for the sake of others. Qualities of mercy, kindness, compassion, they have all reduced. So little something goes wrong and there is a disturbance. So we start feeling very bad. So number one, gossiping and criticizing others. As I said, we remember the example of the sieve and the needle, yes? So why should we criticize others unnecessarily, or even necessarily? Even if there is some genuine fault that is there, why should we keep on talking about it? We should talk about things that are beneficial for our Krishna consciousness. Will it help us to talk about somebody else's problems or about their faults? Will not help us. So why to waste our time? Before we speak, we should think. What I am going to speak, is it necessary for me to speak it? Number two, is it helpful to me to speak it? Is it helpful for the other person to speak this information? is it kind to speak this? It is beneficial to anybody's Krishna consciousness? Is it beneficial about a third person about whom I am gossiping? Is it beneficial to that person? No. So if it is not beneficial to anyone, then why should we speak it? Better to keep quiet or to talk about Krishna. So better we should just focus on some devotional subjects or practical devotional service. That phenomenon of I felt bad because somebody said or did something to me. Yes, we may feel upset, we may feel angry because we are humans, we are not stones. But don't stay upset. Don't stay angry. You may feel angry, that's all right. But don't stay like that. Move on. We have much to do in life. We have to become pure devotees of the Lord. No time to waste for little things, trivial things in life. When we realize the importance of something, then we will do it at any cost, no matter what somebody says to us or doesn't say to us. Isn't it? A businessman who is trying to get a contract worth millions of dollars may sometimes have to tolerate so many things the customers will do. Will he suddenly give up just for some small thing the customer said? No, he is willing to undergo so much of, hear so many things from the customer. Because at the end of it, he will get his millions of dollars of contract. Because he understands, what I'm going to get in return is so big. So these little things I will just tolerate. So similarly, we are here for the long haul, for getting Krishna's prema. To love Lord Krishna, such an exalted goal. So why should we disturb it because of some small trivial things that people say and do? These things happen in life all the time. So we should not take it seriously. We should just go on and not worry about these little things. So you may be upset, you may feel bad, that's all right. But don't stay upset. Don't stay angry. Move on with your life and forgive and forget. Otherwise life could not go on. Generally what happens is, we tend to remember. What many times when I discuss with people, I see they remember some things that people have done to them 20 years ago. 20 years ago he said this to me or did this to me, yes? So why should we keep it in mind? You know, there was one saint who said some very nice things. He said there are two things we should always remember and two things we should always forget. The two things we should always remember are the good things others have done or said to us and the bad things we have done or said to others. So always remember that. And the two things we should forget. The bad things others have said or done to us and the good things we have said or done to others. But generally it becomes the opposite. Yes? We are very alert and eager to remind people of some little good we may have done to them 20 years ago. But we are very eager to forget the bad we have done to them 1 minute ago. So who will remember these two things? What are the two things we should always remember? Someone raise your hand and tell. Yes, a little loudly so everyone can hear.
I'll give it a shot.
Two things we should always remember. Yes, number one.
Things to remember is the good things that the good things that others have done to us and the bad things that we have done to the others.
Yes, very good. The two things to always remember. Number one. The good that others have done or said to us and the bad things we have done or said to others. Think about this for a while. Let it sink in. For 5 seconds, just close your eyes and think about this. two things we should always forget. Who would like to say? Yes.
Good thing we have done to them, and bad things they have done to us.
Yes. We should forget or remember?
We should forget.
So we should forget the good things that we have done or said to others, and we should forget the bad things others have done or said to us. If everybody lived like this, and also everyone was chanting Hare Krishna, this world will become spiritual world, Vaikuntha. But because people are not doing these things, so life becomes very complicated. Right? Now did you get the answer? What, when you feel bad, what you should think? Okay. Some members of Bhakti Vriksha are suddenly dropping themselves from the path of Bhakti. Why? How to guide them? It depends. They could be dropping out for so many different reasons. So you can try to discuss with them nicely and understand what their problems are, that they are dropping out. What could be the real reasons? Very often it is just a spiritual laziness or a spiritual disinclination that comes because of past conditioning. It is not surprising that somebody is dropping out. In the early days when Prabhupada went to America, the devotees were so happy and blissful. And by the dozens, people started becoming devotees. And then, one day, one devotee left. The first time that such a thing had happened to the devotee community. And everybody was shocked. They could not believe that somebody could leave Krishna consciousness. So they came to Prabhupada. Said, Prabhupada, how is it that this devotee left? So Prabhupada said, well, Maya is very strong. It is not surprising that somebody left. It is surprising that somebody is staying. So we can expect that yes, not everybody will become very staunch devotees. Some will come, show some interest and then go away. Some will stay and remain lukewarm for a long time, then become serious. Some may remain lukewarm for a long, long time. Some may become serious very quickly and remain serious. It all depends on so many factors. But on our part, we should try to provide a very conducive atmosphere for them. Take care of them nicely, deal with them with respect and affection. Give them Krishna consciousness in the proper way, set a good example for them, and then leave it up to them whether they stay in Krishna consciousness or not. What sort of lifestyle is there in the spiritual world? Oh. Well, we will find out when we go there. He will tell you everything, then what is there? No, there has to be some suspense. So prepare yourselves nicely so that we can all go. Do people live in a house, have family, a job? Well, certainly one thing I can tell you is there is no software and accounting there. But yes, there are houses, there are families. Everything goes on nicely, but all in pure spiritual consciousness. No envy, no hatred, no greed.
Other side, behind there is a question.
Behind. Do we have to do all services given to us, or the one we are doing right now, that we are good at? Well, it depends. You have to discuss it and see whether you have the time, the energy, the facility to do all the services that you are asked to do, If it is possible for you to do it, why not? But if it is not possible because of shortage of time or some other constraints that you have, you can explain and then select which services are possible for you to do. As you said, bhakti is simple. What about the Vaishnava prat which destroys bhakti? Yes, that is the only problem. If you take care of the Vaishnava prat, then bhakti will be very simple and the progress will be very rapid, very quick. In the lecture you mentioned Brahmaji is next to Krishna. How about Lord Shiva? Of course, Lord Shiva is also the greatest among the Vaishnavas and he is very, very great devotee of the Lord, certainly. Oh, tell us how you joined Krishna consciousness. I'm still in the process of joining. Still haven't understood. Trying to still do something. Why did you take sannyas? So that I could carry this stick and... Anyway, I was preaching, so I needed something to tell, warn people. Somebody has to do. Some people at least have to do. You did. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.
Jai.